Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Today is June 17th, 2007, Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there. We had Ron Paul here in Kansas City on Friday, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to go, but a friend of mine told me about the event, and I just want my listeners to know that I certainly support Ron Paul's candidacy for the Republican Party nomination, and then obviously for the president. And he seems to be getting a lot of following on the internet, but scant coverage on the mainstream media, which is, of course, not surprising. He is the only candidate, I believe, that follows the Constitution at all, and the only member of Congress or of the Senate that follows the Constitution. And if you have not looked into Ron Paul, I would certainly suggest that you go to his website, which I believe is simply ronpaul2008.com, and take a look at his qualifications. You can also go on YouTube and see a number of short video clips of him and his position on various issues. So. But today I'm going to talk about the events of 9/11, and my special guest is Jim Hoffman. I had him on my show when I was at KCXL about a year ago and met him here in Kansas City. He came and gave a talk at the Uptown Theater and just has done an amazing amount of research. I know others have done so as well. And he has a website if you want to sort of follow along on today's show. If you simply type in 9/11 research, I believe the first URL that comes up is his, which is 911research.wtc7, which stands for World Trade Center 7. And that seems to be sort of the focal point of his research. He looks at obviously 1 and 2 and evidence that the government claims supports their position. But Building 7 is I think, one of the most interesting one of the most interesting parts or events of the all of those events of 9/11, because it's a building that collapsed that was never hit by an airplane. And we'll get into those details here as Jim comes on. Jim, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good.
Okay, Jim. Well, I don't know if you heard my introduction. I told people that you've done a great deal of research about 9/11, and one of the focal points of your research is, of course, the collapse of Building 7. That's, of course, a part of it. But I told folks that's interesting because most people don't realize that Building 7 collapsed on that afternoon of September 11th, 2001, about 5:30 in the afternoon or so, some 7-8 hours after the collapse of World Trade Centers 1 and 2. And so, obviously, at some point we'll get to that and discuss that. But if you want to just give folks maybe your background, how you got interested in doing research, and what you have discovered up to date.
My background was in scientific visualization, so I'm a software engineer. I've done a lot of work in the field of mathematical visualization. But I didn't really take a serious look at the events of 9/11 until a couple of years after the event, in early 2003, when I started to look at the alleged total spontaneous collapses of these three massive skyscrapers. And when I looked into these a little bit again, suddenly I realized that the official story was just completely untenable. These were controlled demolitions. And so I think that's what really started me. And from that point on, from basically March of 2003, I began creating the 9/11 research website and the smaller website, WTC7.net, which I think is a great entry point into studying the events of 9/11, because, as you pointed out, few people were even aware of the total collapse of the third skyscraper, as it was kind of overshadowed by the larger events of that day. Nobody was thought to have been killed in the collapse of this building. It was reported on the day of the attack, but then it pretty much disappeared from the...
Right. Due for a quick break here, Jim. Sorry. Hold with us, folks. We'll be right back with Jim Hoffman in just a minute.
PersonalArms.com has all your self-defense needs. PersonalArms.com carries the highest quality law enforcement grade pepper spray and sells it at true wholesale prices that start at $6.95. Check out our new electronic barking dog alarm. This electronic watchdog sees through walls. Electronic barking dog alarm works when an intruder comes within 15 feet. The barking dog alarm will begin barking like a true-to-life angry German Shepherd. The closer the intruder comes, the more frequent and more threatening the barking becomes. You can purchase stun guns, stun batons, pepper spray, telephone voice changers, martial arts instructional DVDs, and the same tasers that you have seen the police use on TV and more at www.personalarms.com/RBN. That's www.personalarms.com/RBN or call 1-201-641-1442. Don't be afraid anymore. Receive a free pepper spray by mentioning RBN when you place your online order. We will not sell items prohibited by any state, county, or local law, so check your laws before making a purchase.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
Hey America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. A special guest on the line with me is Jim Hoffman, and we just barely got started before that break on discussing the events of 9/11 and the importance of Building 7. So, Jim, sorry for the short interruption there, but let's get back, maybe just sort of recap for folks. Of course, virtually everybody in the United States knows what happened, but maybe sort of recap for folks the official story, at least regarding buildings 1 and 2, and if there is any official story regarding building 7 or other buildings that may have collapsed that day, and then let's begin to look seriously at the evidence that the government says supports their position.
Okay, so yeah, the official story is that four jetliners were hijacked. Two of them were flown into the Twin Towers. Of course, we know that a jetliner flew into the North Tower at 8:46 a.m. and into the South Tower at 9:03 a.m. And then, according to the official story, these buildings underwent total structural collapses as a result of the a combination of impact damage and fire stresses that we know when those events occurred, of course, which were 9:59 a.m. for the South Tower. The second tower hit fell first, and then 10:28 a.m. the North Tower underwent a similar total structural collapse. Now, as I pointed out, the total collapse of the third skyscraper, WTC-7, which was an entirely different building across the block, across Vesey Street to the north of the World Trade Center complex, was built 10 years later. It was a World Trade Center a building in name only, underwent a total collapse at 5:20 in the afternoon. And the official story of that, well, there really wasn't much of an official story because the event was so underreported and it disappeared from mainstream reportage after the day of the attack. So that the official story of that only was crafted years after the attack, really. I mean, it was treated by the official investigation that went on in early 2002, but by FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. But the final report on Building 7 still hasn't even come out. The National Institute for Standards and Technology, NIST, hasn't even produced the final report on Building 7, so it remains kind of ignored by the,
right,
the mainstream,
right,
and the official agencies that are supposed to describe it. But the official story, to the extent that there is one, of Building 7 is that it, too, underwent a total structural collapse due almost entirely or primarily to fire stress, because there were fires in this building, and it did receive some damage from the collapse of the North Tower, which was about 400 feet away from it. So that's the official story of this building. And what's interesting about this, of course, is that it would, if it were a case of primarily fire bringing down a steel-framed high-rise building, it would be the first case in history of such a cause and effect. So we have the total collapse of three skyscrapers, the first first spontaneous collapses, allegedly, of three skyscrapers anywhere in North America, and the first cases of alleged structural collapse due primarily to fire of any high-rise building ever in the history of the world, occurring not once but three times on that day.
Right. Well, okay. And if we didn't have Building 7 to look at in terms of its anomaly, since it wasn't hit by an airplane, and let me just remind folks on Jim's website, I don't know exactly where it is, but again, it's if you go to 9/11 Research, that website comes up quickly. Somewhere on his website, and he can maybe tell me here quickly, there are multiple video shots of the collapse of Building 7. And if you watch those, it's quite apparent that the building comes down with what I would describe as almost perfect symmetry, collapses right into its footprint, just as Buildings 1 and 2 did. But if we didn't have, if for example, Building 7 had not collapsed, Jim, what would be the evidence contrary to the government's position on Buildings 1 and 2?
Well, the case of Building 1 and 2 are somewhat different because of the way that they collapsed is so much different than Building 7 that it's many people recognize that as a controlled demolition too, because it has the global features. It has several of these features that seem to be characteristic of controlled demolition, but in a different way, because they collapsed from the top down rather than from the bottom up. So they weren't in any way classic controlled demolitions. They look very different. And I think that's, if it weren't for Building 7, I think people, and I think people still often do have a harder time understanding what those events mean because they're so out of the norm. Whereas the thing that's so unique about Building 7, that's so interesting about Building 7, is that it looks like such a textbook case of controlled demolition. And people that have seen controlled demolitions on TV and know what they look like, they see, you know, the bottom of the building kind of blows up and then the top of it just folds in on itself and just comes straight down into its footprint. I mean, this was a massive, tall skyscraper. It was like seven times as tall as it was deep, and this thing just came down with the precision that is documented in these videos. Now, to see the videos, go to WTC7.net, and on the front page there's a link to the videos. So there's three videos there that very clearly show the symmetry and the suddenness of this event. This building came down. You can actually measure the fall of the roof line of the building, and it comes down within a few percent of the rate of free fall. So there's virtually no resistance as this building just plummets into its footprint. So that's what's so interesting about Building 7 is that even people, I find that even people who aren't inclined to want to entertain any idea that 9/11 was something other than what the official story says it is, if they look at Building 7 and they have some notion of what a controlled demolition looks like, they frequently have this reaction of, oh my gosh, this is clearly a controlled demolition, and you know, whatever that means. And it's, I think it's such a good entry point into reexamining the events of 9/11, because it's just so clear to people when they look at that event that it's clearly not what the official story is. And this, you know, if you start to look at that event, it starts to, you know, like I said, it's an entry point. The whole story starts to unravel, because there's no way that Building 7 being a controlled demolition fits with the official story.
Right. Okay. And I think you corrected me there, at least in where I was going, in terms of there is a difference between the way they collapse. Building 7, if you go again, as Jim mentioned there, if you go to WTC7, that's just WTC7.net, you can see right there on the front page a still photo, and then you can click on there and watch videotapes or videos of the collapse from multiple angles. But 1 and 2 collapse, obviously, from the top down, and so you saw this, you know, this chronology, or this, you know, one floor after another, starting from the top straight down. But even that, Jim, I recall some of the newscasters, I don't know if it was Peter Jennings or Dan Rather or both of them, when they watched it collapse, they both sort of spontaneously said, this looks like a controlled demolition, even though it's different than, you know, any classic controlled demolition where one does it, you know, you have the thing collapse in its footprint and you blow up the bottom first and the whole thing just caves in on itself.
Yeah, and by the way, that's true. Both Peter Jennings and Dan Rather did make such remarks. I find the reaction of Peter Jennings particularly interesting because he's obviously shocked. And then he starts to speculate about, you know, this. Anyone who wants to knows that if you want to bring a building like this down, you have to get at the core infrastructure of the building. And as soon as he starts to say that, Don Dahlhurst steps in and corrects him and says, "Oh no, this building obviously collapsed due to structural damage, and that it couldn't have, you know, that had to happen." Yes, it's true that the way that these came down from the top down was not a classic controlled demolition. But if you consider the more global features, the more general features, number one, of the fact that they fell straight through themselves, straight down, following the path of the most resistance, if you were barring demolition, you know, which doesn't make any sense for a natural event, natural collapse to go straight down. That symmetry is one of the objectives of controlled demolitions, typically, because controlled demolitions typically seek to bring a structure down straight down and avoid it toppling to either side. So it has that very, very key characteristic of controlled demolition. Right. Also, there's numerous other features like these explosive so-called squibs, these little puffs of very high-speed jets of dust coming out well below the zone of where the building is completely breaking up. You see the fact that the building is just so thoroughly shattered and so consistently destroyed. In fact, in the case of the Twin Towers, much more consistently destroyed, much more thoroughly destroyed than any controlled demolition I've ever seen. I mean, the objective of controlled demolition is to bring a structure down and break it up into small enough pieces that it's easy to dispose of the debris. But in the case of the Twin Towers, those things were just blasted into the. I mean, it was just there was. If you look at the rubble pile afterwards. And there's numerous photographs, surviving photographs of that. It's just right. So striking that you can't find any recognizable things in the rubble pile except for the parts of the steel skeleton of the building. It's as if the entire contents of the buildings were just you know, pulverized to you know, small particles.
Right.
So there's numerous features that are only explainable in terms of controlled demolition, but albeit a controlled demolition that is much more thorough than is typically the case. Because obviously, if the objective of the perpetrators of this crime was to create a set of events that fit the official narrative, they had distinctly different objectives than a traditional controlled demolition, which is simply to bring a structure down. Obviously, they wanted to bring the buildings down in a way that fit the official narrative, that it was the plane crashes and subsequent fires that caused the buildings to weaken at the points of the impacts and then to, you know, crumble from that point down.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You mentioned the almost complete destruction of both 1 and 2. And I would ask the question, I've done this with you before, and I'm not sure anybody's done any research into this or how exactly you would do it. But we know from physics that those two structures have a certain amount of potential energy standing there. And then as they collapse, that potential energy is converted into kinetic energy. So absent the relatively small explosions where the planes hit the two buildings, all of the destruction has to be accounted for from the conversion of potential energy into kinetic energy, right?
Yeah, so that gets to be a fairly complicated analysis, but yet I think it's a valid one and I've done a couple of different kinds of analysis based on this energy flow analysis. In other words, so the point is that all this destructive energy to completely shred and destroy these buildings would have to come from the stored potential energy of the elevated mass of those buildings. Now, that's a considerable reservoir of energy. But the question is it enough to explain the pattern of destruction that we've seen?
Because the pulverization,
not only the complete pulverization, but also there's also the energy flow analysis, the rate at which things happen.
Okay. Sorry, Jim, we got to cut to a commercial. We'll be back here in just a minute, folks. Stay with us.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously. Live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Hey, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. I'm talking with Jim Hoffman here about the events of 9/11, and we're sort of focusing on Building 7. Jim, as you said, it's a complicated analysis to look at the conversion of the potential energy of those elevated structures and determine whether that's sufficient to account for the destruction we've seen. But It just strikes me as, you know, just a very sort of a superficial observation that when you look at the streets of New York that we all remember there, the fine dust that appeared on things and the pulverization and then various, you know, comments from firemen and others sifting through the rubble saying it was very difficult to find anything larger than, say, half the size of a telephone. Now, obviously, there were pieces of metal, you know, 20, 30 feet long that we could see from the outer surface of the building, that that facade that went all the way around all four sides. But the contents of the building, you would think some larger, it just seems to me, you know, I could be wrong, some larger chunks of mass would have survived that. And yet, according to reports, nothing larger than, say, half of the size of a telephone survived either of those collapses.
That's right. And I think like you said, there are, you can get into mathematical argument of momentum analysis and energy flow analysis and things like that. And those are interesting arguments, and I think they do show a huge deficit in the amount of energy that was available to do the destruction that we saw. But I think the thing that people understand better is just the pattern of destruction and the thoroughness of destruction. I mean, in any kind of natural collapse event, any kind of random process like that, a natural process as opposed to an engineered process, yes, you would expect there to be some parts of the structure that would be really, you know, really thoroughly destroyed and some high levels of destruction in places. But you wouldn't expect that the entire structure and its entire contents would be just so thoroughly, so consistently destroyed, so ground down to such a thorough, consistent pattern of destruction. I mean, these buildings, if you look at just the missing recognizable parts of the building, for example, there were these floor slabs, these 4-inch thick floor slabs that were poured on corrugated concrete. I mean, rather corrugated steel pans, and those, you know, 110 floors of each building were like this, and those were undergirded by these web trusses that had this very characteristic zigzag rebar running back and forth in the top and bottom lines. And you can't see anything in the rubble that looks anything like this. Now, obviously, if the building had just collapsed, you should see at least some fragments of those assemblies, at least something that's recognizable. But the closest thing you can find, if you sift through these hundreds of pictures of the rubble of Ground Zero, the closest thing you can find is maybe a little chunk of a twisted corrugated steel pan that's no more than a few feet squared. You don't see any of these original assemblies. Not to mention all the other contents of these buildings, like any kind of recognizable piece of plumbing or all the other parts of the building. What happened to the even the glass of the building? It's like you don't even see, you know, chunks of glass. It's like the glass was so thoroughly apparently just shattered into tiny particles. So it's just very striking that this pattern of destruction was just replicated throughout these entire 110-story buildings, and that nothing at Ground Zero that survived in a recognizable form virtually beyond the very tough parts of the buildings, which were the actual skeletons. As you mentioned, the perimeter walls had these columns on 1-meter centers, and those were ripped apart, but you could still see the characteristic spandrel plates and the parts of these columns. But other than that, there's very little that's recognizable in the rubble pile. So I think that's one of the most compelling arguments, is that, you know, people understand that any kind of natural process of collapse or any kind of natural catastrophe like that would not produce that kind of consistent, thorough pattern of destruction that we see in the rubble of Ground Zero.
Right. And then given all that you just said, you follow that up with the fact that all of that mass was carted off very quickly before any kind of forensic analysis could be done. And you would think, this being, as you know, the greatest crime of the century, if you will, at least so far, fortunately, hopefully there won't be anything this bad, you would think people would go in and say, look, we want to look at exactly where pieces of rubble lay and photograph that and look at that and do an analysis before we move anything, just like you would any crime scene. But no, that wasn't the case.
Not only the greatest crime of the century, but also the greatest engineering mystery in history. I mean, this is so unprecedented that any kind of steel structure like this would undergo this spontaneous collapse. Even if they did rule out that it was anything other than Al-Qaeda having done it, and what, you know, the official story, it still should have warranted the most painstaking investigation of examining the rubble pile, gritting it off, you know, treating it like an archaeological dig of what exactly happened here. But that was exactly the opposite of what happened. Instead, the site was sealed off, and they immediately started removing the steel. I mean, the official investigators of the American Society for Civil Engineers didn't even have access to the site until after a large part of a significant amount of the steel, some of the critical pieces, were already removed. And this removal and destruction of the steel, the evidence, the primary evidence of this catastrophe or this crime, continued apace as this very meager investigation continued. The investigators, even later on, only had what they described grudgingly as a tourist trip through the rubble pile. They didn't even have, you know, unrestricted access to this evidence. Instead, the steel was very rapidly removed, put on barges. They even built new infrastructure to remove it. And where did it get shipped? It went to salvage yards, and immediately it started going off to Asia, where it would be melted down at blast furnaces rather than doing any any kind of forensic analysis.
Right. Well, folks, hang with us. We got a break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back shortly with Jim Hoffman, and we're discussing the events of 9/11. If you want to call us, the number is 800-313-9443.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Okay, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in to this Father's Day, June 17th, 2007. My special guest on the line with me is Jim Hoffman. He's a software engineer, and he's done some work in the area of mathematical visualization, too. I believe you've had an article or two published in Scientific American, haven't you, Jim?
Well, articles with graphics that I produced to illustrate some new discoveries in the area of minimal surface geometry. But okay. I was co-author of some scientific articles on the application of surface geometries to a field called block copolymers, which are these sort of self-organizing polymers that organize on these microstructures.
Right. And back to 9/11 then. So you have this, you know, very strange total collapse of the two buildings, and then followed up by a quick removal of all of the rubble that seemed to be, you know, in very, very small pieces, as we talked about. And what was the government? Did the government provide any explanation for why the quick removal of all that, and why no one was allowed to go in and do a forensic analysis of the crime scene?
No, I don't. I haven't really seen an attempt to defend the procedure, the removal of the rubble, the lack of analysis of it, except general hand waving, like the mayor of New York saying, "Oh, you don't really learn a lot by looking at the steel. You can just simulate it all with computer models." That was Bloomberg saying that. So you know, other than some kind of excuses like that, I really haven't seen the government defending its story. In general, it's been very difficult to engage officials and get them to defend the official story. Instead, they basically just ignore the challenges to it, and they put out their official reports, and there's just been a very minimal amount of the officials, like say the officials behind the NIST report, responding to any of the points that people like me are making.
Right. And so let's return to Building 7 then. Again, let me remind people, you can go on to Jim's website, one of which is 911research.wtc7.net. That again is 911research.wtc7.net. And then also, if you want to go directly to the website that shows three video clips of the collapse of Building 7, that's simply wtc7.net. And you can watch those videos, and it's just it's so obvious that those buildings come down with, or excuse me, that building, Building 7, comes down with perfect symmetry. It's hard to imagine how that could have happened without a controlled demolition, and yet the government, I assume, claims that the various fires that resulted, obviously indirectly from the crash of the planes into buildings 1 and 2, I assume, is their story on the collapse of Building 7. Although, as you said, the NIST report hasn't even come out here almost 6 years later on the official collapse of Building 7, right?
Yeah, that's true. So we've been, and they promised it years ago. It was supposed to come out like 2 years ago, and then it keeps the publication of this report on Building 7 keeps being pushed back, even though they came out with their report on the Twin Towers more than a year ago. And the official story of Building 7 seems to be kind of morphing too, because the FEMA report blamed it almost entirely on fire, but then the NIST report seems to have dug up some photographs that show more damage to the south face of this building than was previously known about, and so they are putting more emphasis on the structural damage. But I think the thing that people can easily understand about a steel frame structure and how it would collapse if it did is the fact that, you know, in a building like this, you have numerous columns, and these columns run all the way around the perimeter of the building. Building 7 had about 57 perimeter columns and about 28 interior columns. Mm-hmm. And in order to produce a symmetric total collapse like this, getting the building to sink into its footprint, at, you know, mm-hmm. let alone at such a high rate of speed, it's very hard to overcome the tendency of a steel structure like this to want to remain standing, and especially mm-hmm. to do it in a way to bring it straight down symmetrically requires a precise, very precisely timed destruction of all the columns of the building. If you were to do a controlled demolition and fail to take out just a few of the columns on one side of the building, I expect that the whole building would start to topple, because you'd have this mm-hmm. asymmetric damage, and if mm-hmm. any, as a structure starts to collapse, any asymmetry in the initial the initiation of the event is only going to amplify over time. If you chop down mm-hmm. a tree, the tree doesn't just collapse straight down, it topples over. And of course, especially if a building like Building 7, where you see it's collapsing from the bottom up, of course mm-hmm. Any asymmetry in that initial damage is going to cause the building to topple, and it's going to topple more and more. This building was about 700 feet tall. This would, mm-hmm. it would mm-hmm. topple over on an adjacent building, do a huge amount of damage if it didn't come straight down. So overcoming the tendency of a tall structure, steel structure like this, to want to topple if it collapses at all, is an engineering challenge that, you know, that controlled demolition companies get so many millions of dollars to do these jobs, because it is such an engineering challenge. I mean, they have these things timed to the microsecond when they sever these columns with these cutter charges to bring a building mm-hmm. down. And so the idea that random fires, random structural damage and random fires could result in such a precisely, you know, an event that has these key, these signature features of such a precisely engineered event is just, you know, it's just ludicrous if you think about it.
Right. Well, and the same analysis applies to buildings 1 and 2, I think, doesn't it, Jim? Even though they came down sort of top down from, you know, at least where the fires began, where the two planes struck them, you still had, and that's the very first thing I noticed when I saw them collapse. I mean, I remember that. I remember thinking to myself, the perfect symmetry, how do you get whatever number of columns there are in buildings 1 and 2 all to weaken and fail literally within a tenth of a second of one another, because if you didn't have that, you would have this tilting at one side. And
yeah, the tilting of the top block of the building, because there was a whole portion of each of the buildings that was above the crash zone. Now, in the case of the North Tower, that was only 15 floors. But still, right. And the symmetry in that event is amazing, because if you look at the videos, you see that top of the building suddenly, within a split second, it starts to come down, and it telescopes into itself. Now, how could a steel structure telescope into itself unless you severed all those columns simultaneously? Now, it's even more interesting with the South Tower, this analysis of symmetry, because in the South Tower, the first thing you see is the top of the building. There was a larger block in the South Tower. There's 30 floors above the zone where the plane hit. Initially, you see it start to tilt, and it tilts to about 15 degrees. The top of the building has gone well off center. And again, as people know, because people have experience with things toppling, an object that starts to topples faster and faster. You know, it picks momentum. There's an increasing angular momentum, and it's accelerating because there's a fulcrum, and there's the center of mass is going further and further to the side. It starts to go faster and faster. But if you watch this event, it looks sort of like it's toppling to begin with, but then a very strange thing happens. The rotation actually slows down and actually comes to a halt as the roof of the building is plunging into this exploding cloud of dust. In other words, we have a reversal of an actual increase in the amount of symmetry over time rather than a decrease in symmetry, which you would expect with any kind of natural collapse process.
Right.
So to me, that's a very clear proof that this building was subject to controlled demolition, because I don't see any way that you can account for that halt in the rotation of the top absent completely destroying that fulcrum that would cause it to rotate faster and faster as it toppled.
Right. And comment on this observation, Jim, of one video clip that I recall seeing, and I don't know if it's on your site or not, but it's the one of the two towers that has the, you know, the tall tower on top of it.
The North Tower, that's right.
Is that the North Tower? There's a video clip of that, and it appears, and maybe a careful analysis would show that I'm wrong, but it appears that you see that tower, that antenna on top of, to make the distinction, the antenna on top of the North Tower, you see that dropping before you see the rest of the building dropping, which, if that's correct, indicates that the core is failing before the perimeter is.
Yes, and that's very interesting, because that point alone, that's the correct observation, totally invalidates NIST's, the National Institute of Standards and Technology's explanation of the event, because their explanation of the event is that up at the top of this building there was a thing called the hat truss, and that was this lateral structure that unified the core structure of the building. There were 47 steel columns in the core of these buildings, and then there were about 250 perimeter columns. That structure spanned between those, the inner and outer vertical structure of the building, and unified them so that it transferred loads from, you know, between the inner and outer columns, between the inner and outer columns. And according to NIST's theory, that what happened is that the core columns and perimeter columns were weakened, and that this hat truss, as it's called, was transferring these loads between the inner and outer columns. And then it all fell down as a unit. It was this hat truss, the structure that they put in the building, was actually blamed for this event because it transferred, quote, column instability between the inside and the outside, and then caused it all to plummet at once. But if you look at the video, you see that the mast is falling a good half second. It goes into free fall, basically, a good half second before you see any movement in the outer facade of the building. That right there invalidates NIST's theory of the collapse, because if the hat truss was the thing that was causing the collapse, it was causing the whole top as a plug to come down, then how could the mast have fallen first? It clearly shows that it looks to me like they demolished the hat truss connections as well as the core, and that's what was causing the core to fall first, and then followed very quickly by this telescoping collapse of the rest of the facade.
Right. And as you said, Jim, if in fact this did happen because of the solely because of the crash of the planes and the fire that weakened the structures, and then they pancaked, as I think one explanation was of it. I don't know if that's still in vogue by NIST or FEMA or whatever, but the pancaking theory. But we can talk about that in a minute. But if this did happen that way, then you would think they would want to do an analysis, if for no other reason than to strengthen buildings that might be built in the future. I mean, think about every airplane crash that ever happened, certainly in North America. There's an immediate investigation into the plane. They piece the plane together, and they ask themselves, what can we do to prevent this kind of crash from occurring again? And you would think with these two tall structures collapsing like that, even if it happened in the way that the government says, they would want to examine the evidence and say, what can we do to make a building be able to withstand this kind of assault from outside in the future? But, of course, once you cart away all the evidence, there you can't do that.
Yeah, the lack of a serious – it really exposes the lack of any real interest in by the government in finding out what happened, or because I think the people inside knew what really happened. Mm-hmm. The destruction of the evidence, the farcical investigations, the lack of the investigator, the original investigators having any access to the crime scene, and the mm-hmm. only real funded investigation, the NIST investigation, not even getting started for a couple of years afterwards when the evidence had all basically been erased.
Right.
There's been greater amounts of money spent on little residential fires than these huge events that you'd think right. would have such far-reaching implications if the official story was true. And yet, I think it's interesting that they entrusted the official investigation to the NIST, which is a non-regulatory agency. So all it can make mm-hmm. do is make these recommendations. Its recommendations don't have the force of law. So I think that's really interesting. It can just make some recommendations, but they don't have to be
right.
followed. So there's really not been any change to building codes or anything like that as a result of this that I know of.
Right, right. And let me just remind people, if you want to call in and have a comment or a question for me or Jim, the phone number is 800-313-9443. Again, we welcome your calls, 800-313-9443. Well, Jim, as I told you in the email when we were planning this show, I was at the World Trade Center site about 2 weeks ago, and I think you said you were there about a year ago. And it's interesting to me that the work on the excavating, if you will, the foundation of the new building that's going to replace the towers 1 and 2 is still ongoing there. I mean, there's nothing has been erected. They're still down a story or two below ground level working on it, whereas Building 7 was totally replaced in a relatively short time. You saw it about a year ago. I saw it two weeks
Peter,
ago.
Actually, I misspoke. It was in early 2005 that I was there, and Building 7
okay,
was already
2 years
completed.
Ago. Okay,
it was like
2 years,
ago. Building 7 was right. already erect. And it's almost as if as if not to acknowledge that there even was another building there, they immediately put up Building 7, and yet mm-hmm. the rest of Ground Zero remains this blank hole. They had
right.
they had finished excavating that hole by May of 2002, so it didn't take them long at all. They broke the all expectations in cleaning up the rubble pile. They did it in
right.
half the amount of time that was expected, so they were very
right.
expeditious about that. But then we've had this blank hole here, there in Lower Manhattan for all these years, while Building 7 goes up immediately as if there was never anything that happened there. And the rest remains this like scar, apparently, it seems as if they just want to continue to extract the psychological, exploit
right.
that for what it's worth.
Right, sure. Well, it's interesting that I was there, and there's a memorial area. I don't know if it was there when you were there 2 years ago, but with some pictures and of the events of that day and so on. And there were a couple people there, officials, if you will, providing information to tourists and whatnot. And so I went up to this one fellow, and then he was inside a booth, and I said, can you tell me what was the cause of the collapse of Building 7? And the guy said, vibration from the collapse of buildings, 1 and 2 coming down. And as you pointed out to me, well, that's very interesting because the collapse of Building 7 was at 5:20 in the afternoon. So, a good seven hours and 20 minutes after the collapse of the second of the two buildings. And then it also occurred to me, Jim, if vibration brought that down, then My gosh, is the vibration from collapsing buildings anywhere near as powerful as the vibration from an earthquake? Certainly buildings in New York, even though they're not, you know, on the San Andreas Fault or whatever it is in California, they're certainly built to withstand some kind of earthquake, I would think.
Yeah, the total destruction of the World Trade Center 1 and 2 generated earthquakes that were somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 or 2.5 on the Richter scale. Now, each point on the Richter scale is a factor of 10 in magnitude,
I think,
or energy. So the idea that a magnitude 2 earthquake would bring down a steel frame building, even a severely damaged one, is just ridiculous. I'm sure that buildings in New York must be designed to survive, I don't know, magnitude 6 or 7 earthquakes. So I think those are possible in that area, although extremely rare. And even in places like California where there's skyscrapers, magnitude 7 earthquakes have never brought down a high-rise a steel frame building. So they're engineered to easily withstand, you know, earthquakes that have thousands of times the amount of energy that we're talking about, you know, that building 7 would have experienced by virtue of its proximity to the Twin Towers.
Right. Now, when I was there, I scanning around the other buildings. Obviously, there's some buildings that you can see that were still there. Were any other buildings sufficiently damaged that they were later brought down by, you know, obviously, controlled demolition and so forth? What was the destruction around, besides Building 7, around the perimeter of those 1 and 2?
I don't believe any other buildings outside of the block of the World Trade Center were totally destroyed or destroyed enough to necessitate their destruction. Other than, I think there was an Orthodox church that was right south of the World Trade Center complex, a very small building. But other skyscrapers were severely damaged, by having big gashes in them, but it didn't threaten the building structurally.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we get back, Jim. Sorry to cut you off. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Catholic priest calls on Catholics and Christians to resist an unjust attack against Iran. Father John Martinez, a Catholic priest, speaks out to declare the Catholic Church's true teaching, that it would be a mortal sin for Catholic soldiers to attack Iran. In a one-hour lecture, Father John Martinez warns about the Jewish plot to rule the world and to use the United States to ignite the flames of World War III by its satanic plan to unjustly attack Iran. He exposes that George Bush is Jewish and how Congress is controlled by the Jews. Father John Martinez gravely warns of nuclear weapons being used by the United States and the threat of the possible end of the world. For additional information on how you can help stop World War III, order Father John Martinez's CD entitled An Unjust Attack on Iran, available for $10 by Father John Martinez. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for the address.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products. also made with Himalayan salt, I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SolayWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Okay, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Today is June 17th, 2002. We have our first caller, Jim. That is Peter from Canada. Peter, go ahead. You're on the Peter Mac Show.
Hello. Hi. My question was, have there any structural engineers done any comparisons of the structural support of Building 7 and, say, the A.P. Merle Building in Oklahoma City, so that way one could obviously determine if the supports are similar, that given the amount of damage done to the A.P. Merle Building, which was a substantial, and yet it didn't collapse until they had to eventually bring it down. It's kind of difficult to make the case for World Trade Center 7 that has very little damage in comparison.
Seems to me a good point. Jim?
That's an interesting question to bring up the case of the Murrah Building, because there was some interesting analysis of the damage to the Murrah Building, especially by General Parton, who pointed out that the alleged source of the damage, the truck bomb, couldn't possibly have created the kind of overpressures that completely destroyed these steel reinforced columns that were at the distances that they were from the from this truck that was parked outside of the building. And of course, in the case of the Murrah Building, there were these reports on the local news media about unexploded bombs discovered in the building. So to me, this the destruction of the Murrah Building and the murder of those people inside that building was a very close parallel to what happened on 9/11. I think it was kind of a dry run. They saw if they could pull off a crime like this and get away with it in plain sight, even though there was such clear evidence that this was not what the official story was. There were these unexploded bombs in the building. The FBI that had offices in the building was, interestingly, completely absent from the building on the day of the attack. I mean, there are just so many parallels to what happened in New York City on 9/11. But, no, in terms of the comparison, that's an interesting point that, in spite of how much damage there was to that building, it didn't undergo a total collapse, and yet Building 7 underwent a complete total collapse. There was no part of the building standing. It was just a textbook case of controlled demolition. Now, the comparison, though, is limited by the fact that Building 7 is a 100% steel frame building, whereas the Murrah Building had columns that were steel reinforced concrete. So it's a very different case. Of course, Building 7 also was a skyscraper. The Murrah Building was only about 10 stories tall. But nonetheless, there are these parallels in the way that you have, and the official account, you know, has the lone nut, the plane, the crash, in the case of Building 7, debris from the North Tower hitting it, and yet then the building experiences this huge catastrophic failure. One thing that is interesting, though, is that the official reports of these buildings both invoke the alleged phenomenon of, quote, progressive collapse to explain the disproportionate damage of these buildings to what the alleged initiating event was. In the case of the Murrah Building, they said that that the reason that so much that the damage went was so extensive, although it didn't take down the entire building, was because there was this progressive collapse with one part of the building failing and that creating this kind of domino effect collapse of other parts of the building. That's basically what they're saying in the case of all three World Trade Center buildings, is there's this kind of domino effect. One part fails and that causes this rapid progression of failure to the other parts of the building. And what's so interesting is if you look up the word progressive collapse on Google or something, what you find is primarily references to the Murrah Building and the three World Trade Center buildings.
Yeah, can you hold that thought, Jim? And Peter, if you want to hold on through the break, we'll continue with you. Just hang with us, folks. We'll be back here in a couple minutes. We'll be right back.
with